You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Hanging out with Clement
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So it's the hanging out time, and today I'm hanging out with an award-winning fashion designer who really needs no introduction in the fashion world. He is, I've been saying since this morning, a creative extraordinaire. His work has actually been shown all over the world. And he's been in the game for some time now, over 13 years. And I think he's got a beautiful story to inspire other creatives, to inspire people to go for what they're passionate about. And his name is Tula Cindy. Tula, how's it going, man? Thank you so much for making time.
My pleasure.
How was the festive season for you? What did you get up to?
Not much. Just staying at home. And I think I saw a friend from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just staying home, making it different this year, different circumstances, eh?
Yeah, no, it's a different time to be alive. Okay, I really want us to hear about your childhood growing up in Klerksdorp. So I want to kick off our chat with one of your favorite songs before we start, you know, hearing more and knowing more about you. Ngizalwa ngobani by Thandiswe Maswai. Why do you love this song so much?
You know, I love the song because it really talks about the journey that we've been on personally and as Black people in this country.
Mm.
And often we forget to look back and we forget about the pioneers who have struggled and fought for us to be where we are. Of course, we've got a long way to still go, but it's good to look back and just remember.
Revolutionaries die, and the children forget. The ghetto is our first love, and our dreams are drenched in gold. We don't even cry. We don't even cry about it no more.
Matosana. Look, you are very outspoken. You're not scared to express your opinion. And I wonder if this resembles the young Tula growing up in Klerksdorp.
You know what? Klerksdorp is a strange place. Everyone is quite outspoken there. I always try to explain to people that I'm the quietest person in my family. You know, if you're from a place where people are really vibrant, really outspoken, it just rubs off on you. So when you come to a new context like Johannesburg, where everyone is quite subdued in comparison, honestly speaking, and people really do feel like I'm very outspoken and I'm very vocal, but it's how you grow up. And, you know, Matosana is a place where people really, they strive for more. It's a difficult place. The Northwest, you know, I think it's one of the most neglected of provinces.
Yeah.
And growing up there in the 80s, because I was born in 83, you know, and it was quite interesting. And being born into an Adventist family is the most one of the most bizarre things that one can experience. It's hard to explain.
Why is it bizarre?
To some people. Yes. Because, you know, we're encouraged to read all the time because it's like books on everything, like church books and Bible books. And, you know, so it's a very strange upbringing. And, you know, you're not watching TV on Friday evenings. So you feel kind of somehow isolated, but also part of an interesting group of people.
Yeah.
And I think it's also kind of my type of thinking a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from a very creative family. I'm from a very enterprising family. Like my grandmother on my dad's side had a vegetable business, and she was a very enterprising woman, you know. Masindi was not traditionally literate, but she could count money and she knew business.
Yeah.
And then on my maternal side, my grandparents they used to sell books. They were what's called colporteurs. They were selling church books. So it was kind of very balanced upbringing, but quite unique.
Yeah.
There's actually nothing quite like how I was brought up.
So at what point then does this young man growing up in this small town realize he's passionate about the arts?
Well, that's the lucky thing about growing up in my family. You know, I wanted to be in fine art. I wanted to do either be a painter or a sculptor since I was extremely young. And in my family, we're all kind of encouraged to do whatever we want in terms of work. We're from a very militant type of family in terms of the struggle. And we don't even have middle names. We've all got like just African names.
Yeah.
And that's all my cousins and stuff. And we're just encouraged to like, whatever you're going to do, just be very good at it. So I wanted to be in fine art. And my parents were really supportive because I was also quite dedicated to it. I had all my art materials. But I knew that I couldn't further my dream whilst being in Klerksdorp. I had to leave. Unfortunately, I had a music teacher when I was in Standard 5, Mrs. Phillips, and she gave me forms to the National School of the Arts, and she encouraged me to apply. So I applied, and then, I've never looked back.
Wow.
I've honestly never looked back.
That's interesting, and I think, you know, we never really talk a lot about the role our teachers play in identifying what we're passionate about and helping us direct our paths, right? And I think that's one thing we need to appreciate them for, because a lot of people will say, yeah, when I was in Standard 6, when I was in Standard 8, my teacher used to tell me that they can see something in me, and they help you at least direct the path. And in your case, you know, your teacher told you about the National School of the Arts.
Absolutely. And for me, you know, my path has actually been guided by a lot of school teachers. The way I started school was actually not too great. My mom is a school teacher, so I went to the school where she was teaching for my first three grades of school. And then in 93, I was part of an integration program where I went to a school called Oxford Christian Academy. I went there for a year, and in December, the RVB bombed the school. So I had no school to go to in 94. then I was transferred to Oxford Primary. And the teachers there were really, there was a teacher called Miss Selwood who taught English, amazing woman. There was Mrs. Everstone as well. And each and every teacher kind of like just guiding you forward and trying to identify what you're good at. And I've honestly been very fortunate in that regard. And teachers are so undervalued in this country, but they are the people that kind of spend the most time with us as young people.
Yeah.
And they can honestly really make you or break you, help you identify what you're good at. And I've been really fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, and sometimes they identify things that the people we spend time with at home have not even picked up yet. And then you studied at the London International School of Fashion. Would you say that's where you started really crafting your path in the fashion world? Because you could draw, you loved photography, so it could have been either or, but you chose fashion.
Yeah, because for me, fashion was really the best way to culminate everything that I love. And like I said, I'm also from an entrepreneurial background on my father's side. So it just, it made sense to me. I'm like, I'm artistic, but I like to make products. And honestly, Clement, I like to make money as well.
Yeah,
so
of course.
It just made complete sense to me because I love to be in a dynamic industry. I love to be in something that's rich with information, and that's what business is. You know, when I used to work with my grandmother, when we used to go and buy veggies and stuff, and she was so information-based, you know, she would always use the bulk of her money to replenish what she bought, but she'd take about 20% of her earnings to experiment. You know, she was the first person to come and buy those flavored chips and all of those small little things that came popular later on. I mean, like, this is these late 80s. And but that's how she grew her business, you know, by always experimenting, always moving forward. And it didn't always work, but seeing an older person like her understand that, yes, you can have a stable business that must always move forward, that made me realize that I want to be in an industry that is dynamic, that is that's just rich with information, and that also has real people involved with it. So fashion was a no-brainer for me. I had to go with it.
What was your first job?
Oh, my first job. I got my first job after I graduated, actually, the day after. So I've never been held a day
before. How lucky
are you? I graduated. I worked at Vlisco. Yeah. It was a Dutch textile company. It's been doing Dutch textiles. Well, they're called African fabrics, but they're originally like, well, some are African textiles, but some are really from like the Far East, like all the batik prints and stuff like that. So they had a company here in Johannesburg, and I worked with them for about a year and a half. And that's really where I realized that I want to have my own business. Once you work with somebody and you realize that, oh, I can actually do this, you know, and I was ready to do it. And yeah, I worked for a year and a half and I went on my own.
That's interesting. How did you use that experience, though, at Vlesco to prepare yourself for the Tula Cindy brand? And do you think that's where creatives need to start, not by establishing their own brands first, but to go get the experience, land on the ground, and then start something up?
Clement, that's so difficult, you know, because the thing is that the climate has become so hard for young people to start, especially because those opportunities like internships and first jobs, there's less and less of them. And that's why I did not take interns until about last year, because you know what happens is that the only people that can afford to intern are children from wealthy backgrounds, because they don't need to get paid and they can drive to, you know, wherever they need to be. So it almost makes those few opportunities only available for those who can actually, who actually don't need them, strangely enough. So it's been so tough. So for young people, the only thing I can honestly advise is that one has got to do their research and ask the right questions. And most of the questions, the answers are in a book somewhere. You know, the internet is vast, but wanting specific opportunities such as internships and first jobs, yes, do go and try your absolute best, but circumstances are not on the side of absolutely the most talented people, because you must understand that even very big clients will say, oh, can you have my son come in and do an internship? And it's almost like they're not forcing the matter, but of course, because they've got sway with you as a business owner, you'd be more inclined to let them bring their child in to do an internship. So it's very, very tough, honestly speaking. I think people need to be honest about what the opportunities are right now for young people and why there's such a like a negative feeling all around, because opportunities are very few and one might have to start without having the traditional internship route, the traditional first job route. And it's a really tough one.
Tough. I want us to talk about the Tula Cindy brand when you established it. Tell me about that and why you decided to focus on women wear.
Well, I started in 2006, and honestly, that was the heyday of African, South African fashion brands, because we'd had the Stone Cherries before. They'd laid the ground, the Sun Goddesses, the Ifimals. Everyone had kind of laid the strong foundation. Luxury culture as well had laid the foundation. So the South African consumer was primed now to celebrate what's made in South Africa. What I identified when I started was that a lot of the brands were creating kind of events-based clothing. And like I said, I'm very observant, and I work a lot from information and from data. And I could see that what was missing was more of a practical clothing that one could wear from work towards the evening, and especially on the woman's side. You know, that's where it was really, really lacking. Everything was really either very casual or very events-based. There was nothing in the middle. Whereas most South African women live their lives in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's where I came in. It was really a strategic decision. And it was one of the things that I'm actually good at, because I'm good at menswear and women's wear. But I decided to start with women's wear because that's where the need was.
Yeah.
And the business grew exponentially from there. Because once you make the right product, and luckily for me, I had a small store I was selling my product at. If you make a good product, you put it in the right space that is away from you as the creator, you can grow your business and not just grow yourself as a personality, which is also extremely important, that you don't need to be famous to sell clothes. You just need to make good clothes and make sure that they're being sold at the right place.
Look, I'm going to take some calls and some messages that are coming through. And there's a message just come through here on 31702. And if you've got a question for Tula or you want to speak to him, you can call me on 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. There's someone here who's asking a question that I was just about to ask Tula around how you balance having your premium product, right, and offering that premium service and the issue of affordability. And then KG in Tswane says, please ask Tula about the issue of affordability. Some of us would like to support local talent for obvious economical reasons. I, however, find most local designs are more exclusive and therefore not affordable to your average girl next door. We end up wearing the China or made in China products. What I know is that he already has a target market, but has he thought about expanding into your everyday wear? And this is a question from KG in Tswane.
Clement, you know, this question is very complex in the fact that a lot of people, they are buying dresses and T-shirts for 50 Rand, 30 Rand, 20 Rand. How much is the person that made that getting paid? You know, a lot of the clothing that we are now have got used to in the last 10 to 15 years is basically produced off slave labor. And it's kind of devalued what we think clothes are worth. The fact that you can buy a pizza and it can be the same price as a dress. That is not normal, but that's what the cheap manufacturing in China has created. That's what the fast retailers have created. They've devalued the value of work, the value of sewing, the value of manufacturing, the value of milling the fabrics. And it's at everyone's detriment. It's at the detriment of the people who sew the garments. It's at the detriment of the people that dye the fabrics. It's at the detriment of the environment. Mm. So fast fashion has ruined us even at a mental level, where it's hard to enter this discussion where people think a dress should be the same price as a bright pack of chicken.
Mm.
You know, it's just, and I mean, like, we can go into mass farming and also what the problems of that are. But clothing has a long production line and it needs to pay everyone in the value chain fairly. Mm. And once everyone is paid fairly, the cost will go up. And at the same time, you must understand that there's a difference between fashion and apparel. You will never be naked on earth. But if you want designer garments that have been created by a designer, and it's going to cost you a lot more than anything else.
Mm.
So, and also at the same time, we don't need to have hundreds of items of clothing in our wardrobes. We've really been spoiled by this cheap manufacturing from China that allows us to wear a T-shirt and throw it away, wear pants, and after 6 months, you don't know where they are.
Yeah.
We don't value clothing anymore, so we don't want to pay for it anymore. So it's a double-edged sword. But at the same time, there's different brands that create clothing for different price points. And I mean, that's why I even opened Africa Rise. So people can come into Africa Rise store and realize that there's a Guni brand who's got a different price point, and David Lalu who's got a different price point, and Debo Bakar. That's very important to educate customer, but there will never be cheap clothing, and I hope certain designers never create cheap clothing, because cheap clothing, someone pays the price. Same thing as cheap wines. We know what people in wine farms are being paid to work. So you wanting to afford a bottle of wine and the wine maker wanting to make a lot of money, somebody's going to suffer in the middle, and that's the worker. And that's what cheap clothes create. They create abuse so people can afford things that they wouldn't normally be able to afford. So it's really a balancing act. And we need to focus on fairness. We need to focus on sustainability and also not overindulging ourselves.
Yeah. Where have you shown your work? Okay, let me rephrase that. Where have you not shown your collection? Because you have been to Hong Kong.
I think Japan is the last place.
Beijing, New York, Lagos, Paris, and.
Everywhere. And it's really important because, you know, as a designer, especially a fashion designer, we are so geographically isolated at times that we don't think that what we produce has got any global value. But then you see in the last 2 years, we've had designers like Etebe Magugu win the LVMH prize. We've had South African designers globally making an impact, because what we have in this country is very, very unique. You know, we are very creative people, even with music. Omira Makeba have always been icons in the 60s and 70s. We've always had style. We've always had panache, and that's the fact that we are not only geographically isolated, so we have to create our own concepts, our own trends. We have to create our own Jerusalem dances. We have to just create our own world, because we are so far away from what is considered the imperialist nations, like the Chinas and Americas. We're very far from them. So we have to continue and create our own universe, which has been to our benefit. Now we just need to monetize it and also show the world that we are excellent. whilst we are supporting each other here in the country, but also export what we're good at. Especially, I always say that the real gold of this country is our creativity. You know, just look at the music scene, just look at the art scene in South Africa, the fashion scene. You know, that is where our real talent really lies. And I really wish the government and other bodies would just focus more on growing these industries, because that's the true future of this country.
Yeah, and because I was about to ask you about that support, because it's one thing to be appreciated abroad and to be able to showcase your work abroad, but you need the support from the locals. So how do we then convert people from thinking about you as Tula Cindy and other designers as people they go to for special occasions, but they can think of you about their everyday wear? Like, I can go to the Tula Cindy brand and get a t-shirt for a Tuesday, for a Sunday, as opposed to it's for the summer awards or it's for the State of the Nation address.
Well, that only happens through retail networks, by opening stores, you know, and that's what's important, because most designers have had studios where you have to set up an appointment. And of course, if you have to set up an appointment, you're not going to set up an appointment for a t-shirt. So it's almost kind of being a cart before the horse. That's why I've really ventured into the Africa Rise concept. We have opened an Africa Rise in town. I've opened one in Sandton. I've opened one in Menlyn, where designers ready-to-wear garments can be in a shopping center, where people can just walk in, get educated, because you can only get educated by interacting with products. You know, so us as designers, we can scream and tweet and Facebook and do whatever, but until the customer walks into a space and they see, oh, this designer has got t-shirts, he's got a tracksuit, he's got this and that. That's how people get educated. And I mean, like, we have to be patient with that. Once we have the retail footprint, people walk in and they interact. And once people know and have interacted with the product, they spread the word and organically it grows.
Yeah.
So we've come very far. In the last 10 years, we have come very, very, very far, and I think we're going to do quite well. Well, after all of this, it's
cool. Yeah. Look, I want us to talk more about that Africa Rise concept. I just think it's incredible. You recently opened the third store in Menlyn, so we'll talk more about that after the news.
Hanging out with Clement
on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
25 minutes before 11 o'clock, it's the Hanging Out feature, and today I'm hanging out with Tula Cindy, award-winning fashion designer. And Tula, there's someone who agrees with you on the SMS line who sent me a message on 31702, Rose, who says, "Hi Clement, well done to Tula Cindy and his brand. Just to add to his comments regarding cheap garments, even the cost to manufacture ordinary apparel and essential clothing is viewed as expensive in Mzansi because of the dumping by China. I know this. I own a small CMT factory." So that's an SMS from Rose. And remember, you can also send your views on 011, or you can call on 011-883-0702. If you want to be like Rose and send a message, you can send that on 31702. And I'll play some voice notes on 072-702-1702. So Tula, I wanted to talk about, you've mentioned the Africa Rise concept, and it's just incredible, right? Talk to me about why you decided to go that route, because what I was thinking about is also just the convenience of, already you've spoken about the presence that is needed at these premium malls, but also the convenience of me as a customer. I can walk into the store and I've got all these options, and I can almost get a whole outfit in this one store. And I like that convenience from the side of a customer. Speak to me about that concept and how you decided to go this route.
No, absolutely. You know, it's been years I've been working on this concept, because in my mind, retail has really been the last frontier for us as fashion designers, especially as black entrepreneurs in South Africa. Access to market is really our last challenge, and that's where the money has been made, is with the stores. And after having my own retail network of stores, I said, what is the next step? What can I do for my industry that will create some, you know, palpable difference? And that was the Africa Rise concept. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you wait for other people to do it. You know, there's people who've got more money, more contacts, more everything, but they just never got around to it. So I said, you know what, let me do this myself. And in 2019, we opened the first Africa Rise in Sandton. And that was true success, you know, because people just want convenience. People are time starved.
Yeah.
They want to enter into a space where there's menswear, there's womenswear, there's kidswear. There's all the brands that they hear about to see on social media, but the product is right there. You can touch it. You can feel it. You can communicate with the sales assistant about what makes this special. And each and every product is housed in the designer's concept. So each designer has got their own section, and they fit out that space to look like what their brand represents. Because people need to understand what Africa Your Time Is Now is about. They need to understand what David Lally is about. They need to understand what Chula Cindy is about. And if you can step into a space that embodies that whilst the product is there, it just makes so much more sense than anything else, you know. So I've been aggressively expanding ever since. We opened the CBD store in August. That's just after we got to level 3.
Yeah.
Because I'm passionate about the CBD because there's so many young people in town. They are also the big banks, which are all based there. And, you know, they've got the right kind of customer. And we need to be accessible in terms of location. Then the third store we opened in December in Menlyn. And I want to open two more because the thing is that once you have a space that is convenient for customers to get to and the product is good, there is no reason for us not to do well. So far we have been, even with the challenges of the coronavirus and the lockdown, we have been showing very strong numbers. And I'm very, very thankful to the designers as well, because finally they can just focus on creating good product, and I will focus on the nitty-gritties of finding us a retail space, making sure that customers get there, doing all the logistics. And it works so beautifully. And as an industry, it takes us to the next level where we can just focus on growth and not have to juggle everything at the same time, which is not for everyone. You know, most creatives are just really great designers, great product producers, and they need to focus on that instead of being now having to do everything.
I mean, you need to be mainstream. We need you in those shopping centers where people are spending their money. Let's go to the lines now on 011-883-0702. I see we've got a call from Azania Mosaka, who's a colleague here on 702. Hello, Aza.
Hi, Clement. I thought I couldn't hold myself because you're speaking to just an incredible designer and business person. I love South African fashion, always do my best to support it. And I think no conversation with Chula Cindy can happen without also acknowledging that he has created an iconic dress. You know, not many designers will leave an unforgettable mark. Not many get to have that privilege. And I think Chula belongs to that rank of group of designers who have created an unforgettable silhouette and an iconic dress in the form of his twist dress. So I just want to acknowledge that first and foremost, because I think it's an incredible accomplishment. You know, you have a Diane von Furstenberg who gave the world the wrap dress, which of course has gone on to be iconic. Tula has given the world the twist dress. So I just wanted to applaud him on that. And also just to ask, what is the difference? What lessons has he learned from having his own standalone retail store in Rosebank as a standalone designer by himself, and then closing that and now standing in a retail space with other designers as a sort of collective? What are the lessons from these two very different retail models?
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Aza. Tula?
Thank you, Aza. Yes, the twist is my signature. It is my flagship style. And it's really good to have classics. It is really good, and I really appreciate that. And in terms of the retail network, you know, I had three of my own physical stores, and now I'm only left with the one in Menlyn, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you need to be flexible, and you need to be responsive. And that's the lucky thing about being agile as a medium to small business. Instead of the big businesses that have got a lot of red tape, we can change direction. And that is something that I'm always trying to impart with designers and to impart with people, that there is really nothing like failure when you're in business. One is always recalibrating, seeing what works. You look at the numbers and you see what can take us forward and what can collectively bring us to the next level. And honestly, the next about 4 or 5 years is really going to be about the collective and the collective effort. You look at even now with the virus, it's about collective responsibility, collective community interaction. It's important now for us to think about how our actions affect the next person. You know, the previous 10 years has been about me. How do I have my store? How do I get to the top? How do I get spoken about? How do I get to be the one? You know, and times change. And that's, I love to live within my times. And I don't know if people can feel it, but in the air right now, it's all about collaboration. It's about community in every sense of the word. And for me, I feel it so innately that I had no choice but to say, let me do something for the collective designers and also for myself. It's not altruistic. It's honestly, it's about the new way forward. You know, and as a creative person, we are so in tune to where things are going. And that's why people always ask me, how did you know? But you know, you can feel it, that people, they walk into your store, right? And they be like, oh my God, I wish we had this and this and that. But you're like, oh no, but I know a designer that does that. If I had this stuff in my store, that would have been a sale for me, you know what I mean? So it came about like that. And for me, those are the lessons, to always trust your gut, to trust the information, but also to always be plugged in. And that's what, as a creative person, one needs to be, whether you're listening to music, listening to people, looking at your surroundings, you will always know what the next step is if you are plugged in.
You mentioned the challenges during the lockdown and how you still want to open two more stores. I'm sure you get a lot of people asking you, because you've been launching the stores during the pandemic. I'm sure you've got people asking you, things are not looking good, Tula, economic prospects, you know, people's buying power. Are you not often told you are taking a big risk? And I saw what you tweeted the other day, which I thought was so profound. And let me try and find it. I think you said, and I quote, you know, so many people have been asking me if I'm not scared for my business. Well, as long as there is life and health, I feel I can start again, rebuild and recover. If not to how things were previously, then to a new way that serves the new reality and circumstances.
Absolutely. And that's how I feel. I don't operate from a place of fear. I'm not a fearful person by nature. And maybe because I grew up in a place where people are very open about failure and moving forward. So I'm really not afraid. I know that things change all the time and I know how to respond. And I really do feel like right now, yes, we are going through a very tough time economically. But the good thing about it is that it is a collective struggle. So you do know that there will be a collective solution. You know, it would be very sad if this was only happening in South Africa. Then we'd honestly be on our own. But now, you know, there's a global effort to find a solution. Vaccines are on the way. And another thing, as terrible as it sounds, others have fallen by the wayside. So they're actually, yes, there's less spending power, but there's also less competition right now. You know, and because a lot of the other bigger businesses were overly leveraged, overly indebted, and some of them are gone. So it leaves only us. And at the same time, the customer is looking for something more special right now, where they say, if I do need to spend, they'd rather spend on something that has a good brand story, that has good quality, that has local relevance as well. So that's where we need to be. So it's challenging, but it's also an opportunity. And it's very important also for Black entrepreneurs to not always have to cower back into smallness when there's disaster. We also need to be able to capitalize when things go a little bit bad. We also need to be ready for when things pick up again, you know. So it's just a new way of thinking, just being also being where the action is. That's really, really important.
I love that.
Because this is our country, you know what I mean? We need to be where the action is, and the customer is there. We just need to be ready.
Yeah, I really, really love that. And speaking of risk, here's another favorite song of yours by Elaine, Risky.
Clarity is clear to see. He said, enter at your own risk. I am not responsible for the misery I will bring you. It's just a matter of time before I start to destroy you. Let me warn you. I said, take your time, boy. Let's see what you got, boy. After to break through first, and it won't be my first time. Girl, you need just let it bleed.
Tula, I mean, I was feeling bad because I was telling Laura now that I actually discovered Elaine in December, and I'm feeling like, why am I so late? You know, but I mean, apparently she's been around for some time, and she's doing amazing. Like, she just caught me, and I've been listening to her music throughout December. There's someone here who sent a message. He says, Tula, you are an inspiration to the nation. This interview needs to be repeated again and again. You are so right regarding the collective responsibility. Many blessings coming your way. And then this SMS is signed 75-year-old Fiona BFV. So even some tweets, people showing you some love, people appreciating. Some people say they've come to your stores and they love how welcoming it is. Miss P, Clement, thank you on Twitter. Says Clement, thank you for bringing this young, inspirational person. Blessings to you, Tula Cindy. We were talking about taking risk before we played the song, Tula, and it's all good and well to say people must take risk, but they also need the support. Are we investing enough in African designers? Because they've got so much to offer. They've got the unique skills, but what they need is the support and the access to the market.
Please don't get me started on that. it's highly upsetting. You know, the thing is that the South African consumer is doing their part. They are faultless, honestly. Like, if you think in the last 15 years, how far the South African consumer has come in terms of how they used to view South African garments to where we are right now in South African products, it is a complete 180, and the support is there, but we need structural support from institutions like the government, from art and culture, from, from corporate as well, who have been historically excluding Black entrepreneurs, especially people of the creative sector as well. So we need real support, and that's not as forthcoming as it could be. There have been efforts, that I won't lie. There have been efforts by government, by arts and culture, and it's a continual type of debate. But we're in a very tricky country where, we've got all of the best intentions and all of the best laws, but the implementation sometimes and the rollout of assistance is so lacking, and it's really not holistic, and it really doesn't speak to the core or the reality as well, and I mean, like, I've faced those challenges myself in terms of there's an internship program that I've been doing where I've been trying to create this program for the last 5 years, and only this year did it get approved, because finally the CETA saw the wisdom in what I was talking about, saying, if you want to help young designers, you need to help them holistically. You cannot just say, come and do this internship. How are they going to get there? What are they going to eat when they get there? How are they going to get back home? How are they going to, there's a reality that is South Africa that I think is not often faced in terms of how can we uplift the youth? How can we return dignity to the people? How can we implement all of these well-meaning concepts, but in reality, in real time, with real results? So it's tough, but I'm hoping for the best. But honestly, we just have to soldier on.
Yeah. What is it going to take?
It's hard to say. You think leadership with some sort of intent, but we're faced with so few viable options. And it's just a global issue. It's not just here. It's just that the political system seems to have been infiltrated by people that don't really want to work, or once they get in there, they just get tired, or they get overwhelmed, or they get waylaid into other fights and other things that they're busy with, but they're not busy in uplifting and doing what should be done, or even just doing their jobs. So I honestly don't know, because short of me going into politics, I wouldn't really honestly know why people refuse to just do their jobs and have pride in doing what's right. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for most of them, and it's embarrassing, but they're shameless, and I mean, at every level, I look at my hometown and how it has been systematically destroyed by, bad mayor after bad mayor after bad premier. I don't know, but I'm not hopeless, that there will be a change, but right now I'm, you know what, we'll see. We'll see.
What do you think this is doing to a young Tula Cindy in Matlosana, in the Eastern Cape, in Soweto, when they're looking at the support that is just really lacking, and they're just wondering, what are the odds? Should I take chances and go into this industry when I see that we are not having the leaders come and play the role that they are supposed to play?
I mean, it's really tough. It's honestly, I always try and explain to young people that when I started, the atmosphere was completely different. 15 years ago, the atmosphere was completely different. There was hope, there was spending power, there was a way forward. Right now, there's a very negative kind of feeling all around. And of course, different eras go through different moods. You know, right now we're in a very, pessimistic type of mood, but one can't give up on what you dream. You just need to perfect it. You need to upskill yourself to the point where what you do will be necessary, you know. And young people really go read books, search the internet, search for answers, practice, get so good at what you do that you will be necessary. Because one cannot wait for the third person or second person to lift you up right now, because it's so tough. But to focus on your craft, to upskill oneself, is vitally important. And that is the only thing I can really impart with young people who want to do this business. Because I always say fashion is one of the easiest businesses to get into, because all you need is talent and skill and practice. Lots and lots of practice. Because at the end of the day, it's the product that speaks for you. So whether you made that product from your mom's house, or you made it from your mansion or wherever, the product is what speaks for itself.
Yeah.
And that's why, especially young people who might not be in the financial position, they need to be so skilled that they will stand head and shoulders above any other competition.
Yeah. I've got a message here from Tsepo on the SMS line, who is asking you, says, can Tula tell us something we don't know about himself? Can I guess, Tula? You can fix cars.
Yes. Yes, I can fix cars. That's what. What else people don't know about? Because I think I'm very open about the kind of person that I am. But I love gaming. Like, I love, like, you know, like PlayStation and stuff like that. That's really kind of my thing. That's what I'm really, really into. And most people don't associate that with people that love fashion and whatnot. I'm supposed to love cocktail parties and champagne. I love gaming and I can fix cars. Well, if the car ever breaks down, you can bring it to me.
I'll give you a call. The message here, what a great pleasure listening to Tula. He's dropping one pearl wisdom after another. I've come to so many realizations from just this one interview. On Twitter, Alvaro says, the beautiful conversation with Clement speaking to Tulas on 702. It's very inspirational indeed. It's everything fashion business. And then somebody else says, Tula should be a motivational speaker. Tula, maybe that's something you'll consider. Thank you so much for making time to hang out with me. This was very educational. It was fun for me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for making time.
Thank you, Clement. It was a ball.
All right. Have a beautiful day. Tula Cindy is a fashion designer. He was dropping pearl wisdom one after the other. Hey, what an inspirational